Black are gold pants, 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 black podcast.
Blackheart Gold Podcast, episode 30, the big 3-0. It's like a giant black balloon hanging over our souls. Hawkeye State, Adam Jacoby, joining you. Later on tonight, we will have Scipio Tex, one of the many contributors at Barking Carnival, the fantastic indie alt chillwave Texas blog. But first, in the way that you used to have to do on your first day of school, Adam, what have you done this summer?
Well, we've been up to a whole lot this summer, haven't we?
That we have.
We attended the Blogs with Balls 3.0 in Chicago at the Captain Morgan Club in Wrigley Field. And I believe I can speak for you as well when I say that it was a fantastic experience and exceeded even our wildest expectations for the amount of fun that we had. Correct?
I would agree completely with your characterization of Blogs with Balls. Met some people that I've always kind of wanted to meet, including I'd already met Brian Cook before, but Brian Cook was there, Spencer Hall from Every Day Should Be Saturday, Jason from 11 Warriors, Mason Brew Dave. I'm going to miss like 40 people. Eamon Brennan from ESPN, countless others. And I think at the end of it, we had officially become a buzz blog. We had become old.
Right, right. We were the talk of the town, the toast of Chicago.
Is BHGP going to be enough to save 2K10 plus 5 or 2K10.5?
Are we pants wave?
Are we pants wave? Man, hipster runoff is great. So, we went to Blogs with Balls 3. Everything was great there. Spencer and Brian got into it with Jason McIntyre, and Adam clapped by himself.
I thought they had like a chorus of 30 people who also agreed that that what Brian's trying to do at MGoBlog is a noble enterprise, and that the fact that he is hurt by being a blog because of, you know, people like the Big Lead. I thought that was a very salient point, and I thought I was going to be the first person clapping and not the only person clapping. Because when you're the only person clapping, you are officially a freak show.
True. Let me just say this in my defense. I would have
clapped. But I am very enthusiastic about it.
I would have clapped, but I was too busy focusing on the Jeremiah Weed sweet tea vodka drinks that were on their way.
God bless Jeremiah Weed.
Let's go ahead and say this right now. Jeremiah Weed sweet tea vodka might be the greatest thing ever made.
I would agree completely. I believe that Jeremiah sweet tea vodka should be named President of the United States.
Right. It really, it's a wonderful beverage. Intoxicating in many ways.
And I believe
not just because it's actually intoxicating.
I believe you're enjoying a John Daly as we speak right now.
I just finished mine. I got to go get a refill as soon as we're done here. But okay. Yes, I am enjoying a John Daly. To bring the readers to speed on a couple other things, if you've noticed that I haven't been quite as active in the last month or so, it's because I received a transfer at work and have put the Blackheart Gold Mansion in Davenport on blocks, so to speak, and have moved to Des Moines, in particular Waukee, where I am currently house-sitting for one of my friends. And when I got here, I quickly noticed that they had a bar in their basement. And not only is there a bar in the basement, but it is stocked with about 8 bottles of Jeremiah Weed sweet tea vodka.
See, you have more self-control than I do. I have not bought any Jeremiah Weed sweet tea vodka since our trip to Blogs with Balls. And it's not because I don't like it. It's exactly the opposite. There are some certain things that you should indulge in once, but only once. You know, because otherwise, like I'm talking about John Daly, there is the gin and tonic with Hendrick's gin and cucumber slices. There is sexual intercourse under the influence of ecstasy. You know, like the things that ruin everything else in the genre once you try them. So you can't. If I started drinking John Daly's with Jeremiah Weed sweet tea vodka, you would never hear from me again. I would sell everything I have, including limbs, for that.
It really is just a spectacular thing. And we're going to go ahead and just say Jeremiah's Weed Sweet Tea Vodka as many times as possible over the course of this podcast in the hopes that they will start sponsoring us. And by sponsoring us, I mean in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yes.
So, yes, there have been many developments in our world. And by the way, I'd like to – Ross isn't here tonight, but Ross has been picking up a lot of the slack in my absence, and I truly do appreciate it. Many of you might have noticed that the quality of writing has gone up exponentially in the last month, and that's because I'm not writing so much and Ross is writing more. We also have a couple side projects in play. Adam is still weekend editor at SB Nation. And how is that going? Editor of SB Nation, whatever.
I'm not sure that merits an O before it. No, it's going wonderfully, and I want to especially hail John Boyce of Dugout fame prior to this, and he is my sort of I'm the number two to his number one, not in a scatological sense, but
in a poop sense.
No, not in that sense. An organization.
Poop jokes.
Yeah, they make the world go round. He is one of the funniest people in all of Blog Fricka, and he, like Spencer, is on, so to speak, all the time. You know, it's not some act he does when people are reading and that's it. And so it's been a blast. It's my second favorite writing gig ever. Love you, BHGP. And I encourage all of you to visit SB Nation as much as possible on the weekends, maybe on the weekdays too, but especially on the weekends.
Yeah, don't bother going on the weekdays unless Spencer's doing something. Yeah. I kid. I read it every day.
The weekdays are assy.
We're very good corporate soldiers. Read them every day, but especially when Adam's writing. As for me, yes, I do have side projects. They aren't really that vloggy so much. Starting hopefully next week, we're still working out the details of it. But Dave from Mason Brew and I will be hosting another podcast that's slightly more Big Ten-centric instead of simply Iowa-centric. Although this one has never really been that way. It kind of turns that way into football season when we have, you know, guests from each school and you know, whatnot. So,
are you talking yourself out of this project before it begins?
I think I am, actually. I'm just seeing myself doing the same podcast twice. No, the tentative name of it is Gold Brews Podcast, which, again, is tentative. It could be Mace Pants. I think Mace Pants is probably the way to go.
Well, pants have to be prominently involved. Otherwise, what's the point?
Pants on the ground. That should be starting next week. Details will be posted if and when they actually do occur. As I said, Dave and I have been playing phone tag trying to get everything hooked up, but we should be good to go starting next week. Also, I'm making an appearance under my actual, real, legitimate name in not one but two separate publications.
Dun-da-da.
This summer. The 11 Warriors Maple Street Press guidebook, which I think is called Buckeye Battlecry, ironically enough, I'm writing the Ohio State schedule preview for them, which basically turned into like 8,000 words on Ricky Stanzi, and oh, by the way, you're also playing Michigan. There's about 16 pages of my least insightful work in there. And then a quick 750-word blurb on what to do in Iowa City for the Black Shoe Diaries, Maple Street Press publication. Many have been asking if we're going to do that someday. And, you know, quite frankly, after talking it over with Maple Street, I think they're a little worried that it would just turn into pornography.
Which is a completely logical and understandable concern.
Right. Because Maple Street's not in the smut business.
Right. No, they're in the maple business.
They're in maples and streets. And you know, I've seen porn that involves maples and streets, but not for a while.
It gets a little contrived.
You're trying too hard. 5 alt porn? We're not going to get into that. just read Hipster Runoff. With that out of the way, we will let you know that we're starting to gear up for football season. It's the light at the end of the tunnel. We're down to, as the time of recording, 74 days until kickoff. And so things are starting to heat up. Assume the position's going out once a week. Ross is writing ridiculous amounts of stuff about, like, Eastern Illinois. We're slowly but surely chugging through the desert that is the off season, and there's a light at the end of the tunnel, folks. We're only about 45 days until fall practice begins with the return of Bob Zook. And once Bob Zook makes an appearance, really, it's just a mad rush until the Orange Bowl, Rose Bowl, National Championship, Insight Bowl, whatever the hell we end up in. And as we said, we have Scipio Tex on tonight to talk about a little bit of expansion, which should be interesting, especially given the fact that Adam ripped Texas for their expansion shenanigans and tomfoolery. So we'll be back in a couple seconds with Scipio, and in the meantime, get a refill. Lord knows you're going to need it. Episode 30, Black Heart Gold Podcast, back for part two, as promised, Hawkeye State, Adam Jacoby, joined by Scipio Tex of Barking Carnival, the fantastic conglomeration that is Texas football, Texas basketball blogging. Scipio, what's going on?
Hey, not much. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm a big fan of you guys.
You lie. I mean, clearly.
I've never heard of you, but I just like the opportunity to talk on the phone. My therapist thinks it's good for me. So.
we're going to talk expansion. We're going to talk a bunch of other random stuff. But before we get there, Scipio, as you've informed us, you've got longstanding, deep roots with the University of Iowa football program.
Yes. I do. I do. I wanted to unveil them and impress both of you. So aside from the fact that Hayden Fry is a Texan, and I know that guy is near and dear to your heart, I played junior high football and played in the city championship game against Cedric Shaw, your great running back from the mid-90s.
Yes.
And Demo Odoms was my teammate. And, of course, Demo is... And you're a team with a lot of good names historically,
right.
But Demo, his full name, Adam, you actually knew this when we were talking about it before.
Well, this is all supposed to be spontaneous, sir. What are you talking about?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Actually,
Demosthenes is his full name. The third.
So there were two Demosthenes before him, and it's not Demosthenes, the Greek. Historian, philosopher, Demos needs. Like, you need Demos, more Demos.
They put their own little spin on it, you know, they livening it up for the new generation.
Absolutely. Yeah, so this was back in the days when Iowa actually had a pipeline into Texas, and we're, you know, pulling out athletes. And so anyway, I played with Demo in junior high. Demo actually played, he was a receiver at Iowa, I believe. And,
yes,
yeah.
He was pretty notable in that he actually ran like a 4.640, which at Iowa is booking it.
Watch it.
But, sorry, Tim Dwight is pissed.
Hey, Andy Brodell takes umbrage with your
you know what?
Quote there.
He stuck it up our ass in the Alamo Bowl.
Damn right he did.
I shouldn't be talking any garbage about that guy.
Just because he's light doesn't mean he ain't fast.
That's true.
It's deceptive.
Demo actually was fat, short, little, and mean, and he played line. And then he actually had a weird blossoming and became a track guy. And then Cedric was, we played him in the city championship, and he was a badass even then. He, I think he scored the game-winning touchdown. So there's my deep connection to Iowa football.
Well,
so.
that is impressive, and I must say, if Cedric wasn't wearing the uniform with the feathers on the shoulder pads, you didn't get the best Cedric. Back when Cedric was playing for us, we had uniforms with feathers on the shoulder pads.
Now, were these painted on feathers, or did you actually tape on some feathers?
They were like these kind of like yellow kind of like, bars that kind of like tapered off into
stripes.
Feathers.
Yeah.
Why would Hayden Fry dress you guys up in with epaulets made of feathers like Liberace?
It was during that sad period when we were getting our equipment from Apex One. that was the source of the problem.
Weren't your shoes British Knights?
They were ruse.
LA gear, baby.
I think the reason that Iowa was going with Apex One back then was like, wasn't AC Earl like one of the either owners, like co-owners, or
that sounds right. Yeah. There was some kind of weird connection between AC Earl and the Apex One guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apex One, we're sad to announce, is not in business anymore.
Shocking.
Oh, they're not.
No.
I felt like I've seen a lot of their commercials recently during the World Cup or the NBA Finals. Am I off?
No, that's Nike. Nike.
We must protect this condo? Is that Apex One?
That was Apex One. That's exactly what it was.
That never held the way that Armour.
I will say Armour that I do still have, at my parents' house, I still have an epic vintage Apex One Yankees jacket. It's fantastic. I kind of want to break it out now.
We're heading into Gadsden Purchase territory.
Yes, and we can't get there too fast. So
exactly.
Let's talk expansion. What was supposed to be, you know, kind of a big explosion, kind of turned into a whimper, and it was all thanks to you and your cohorts there, Scipio. What's your take on how this played out? Is Texas truly the big beneficiary of the new Big 12 deal, and is it, in your opinion, better than the potential of a Pac-16 or a Big 16 for Texas?
Yeah, so Hawkeye, as you know, Texas has long been known for its charitable view towards the rest of the Big 12. And we didn't make the move because we felt that we wanted to benefit Iowa State, Kansas State, some of the fine universities, / accredited junior colleges that form the rest of the Big 12. And, we did it purely for others. There was no self-motivation. It wasn't about money. It's never about money for us. It's about the integrity of the game.
Yes.
That's why we have Taco Bell commercials during our games. And,
Let me ask you this.
We name our field after any alumni who can give enough money. So
let me ask you this. No, let me ask you this before you go any further. Do you actually raise a burrito in the stands during the game? Because if you don't do that, then quite frankly, we've got you beat.
It's almost that close, but actually, Texas Tech throws tortillas from the stands. So
are they sponsored tortillas, or was that something just completely organic, so to speak?
They're freelance organic tortillas. They're Berkeley tortillas.
Well, I think they're missing out on an opportunity to cash in. I'm sure Mission would love to get in on that action.
Well, and I think, you know, if you've got a new line of, say, sorghum tortillas or something like that, you want to – I think that's the promo. That's the money move that you make. Back to your question to actually try to treat this semi-seriously, which I think we're going to have trouble with. But,
a little bit, yeah.
I wanted to go to the Pac-16. Full disclosure, I thought it was a better move for the fans and for the school academically. I don't understand this, and actually maybe you guys can shed some light on it. But for the life of me, I can't get anyone to explain to me why academic cooperation and research grants and, you know, various little academic cabals that they form are often formed by the athletic conference. Not that they are directly involved, but, I mean, schools, I mean, the Big Ten is a classic example of they align a lot of their research efforts via the athletic lines, these fictitious lines that are drawn for an athletic conference. And, you know, for that reason, I thought that would have been hugely beneficial for Texas. You know, Texas is a good school, and I think it would have been a good thing for us to be with some peer institutions or even institutions that are better schools, like, you know, Stanford or Cal. I think that would have been a good aspirational thing for the university. Sort of, you know, what Nebraska is going to be getting with you guys. It's going to be, you know, they're the dumpiest house in the richest neighborhood academically. And I think the Big Ten will actually help make their college more credible, and it'll create some academic partnerships. So that was the serious part as a Longhorn that I wanted to see us benefit. The second piece was I thought it served the fans better. I mean, I can get excited about road games in Seattle in October or playing USC in the Coliseum, you know, playing UCLA in the Rose Bowl. Those are great environments. It's interesting. And I also think that Texas recruits, I mean, the basic rule that we learned from the Big 12 is that anytime you get televisions in Texas, your teams in Texas, you can access the Texas recruiting pipeline. And you know, there's a lot of good high school football played in Texas, and the Arizona schools, the Southern California schools would have benefited immensely. And I think you would have seen the quality of Pac-10 football rise once you had that heightened interest from, you know, a Texas and an OU joining your conference, among others. So, what it did actually serve well, though, and then this is why ultimately the decision was made, and it is about money with us always, is Longhorns Incorporated. I mean, once Dan Beebe in the 11th hour sort of cobbled together this deal through the networks, where the networks are essentially overpaying the Big 12 now for our games.
Grossly. Mm-hmm. Overpaying.
Yeah. Grossly overpaying us. I mean, it's absurd.
If I can just interject right there, I think that it is an overpayment, but I think that the Big 12 was being vastly underpaid. Like, the contract that they were under was a farce.
Yes.
And so at least they're getting back to the level where they should be, but it seemed like, and I don't know how he did it other than dreams and empty promises and fairy dust, but I don't think that
BB?
Big 12 schools. Yeah, and BB, I don't see how they're worth that much. You know, I don't see how they're worth, I think it ended up being like 250 or 200% more per school once it all gets added up. I don't see how that's feasible.
Yeah, I don't either. I'll believe the numbers when I see them. I think part of that is actually they're factoring in some of the penalty fees for Nebraska and Colorado. But also, the networks, what they feared was the great unraveling, right? Mm-hmm. Which is once you form a super conference of 16, the SEC has to raid the ACC. The Big Ten will make its big push in the East Coast and maybe even try to get Notre Dame to finally, you know, get off the pot. And then suddenly you've got the three major super conferences, maybe four, probably three. The rest of the conferences aren't viable. You have the basis for forming a playoff because now, you know, kind of going undefeated isn't something that you can really expect these teams to do routinely and create the BCS stuff. So I think they basically did it to attenuate the risk of this sparking a great unraveling. And, you know, Texas deserves the money it gets just if you look coldly at the number of TV sets and sort of national interest and all the other things you factor in, on-field success. But, I mean, you know, the Big 12, if you look at the population base, I mean, you've got schools like Iowa State where they're not even the number one school in a rural, small state. You know, they're an afterthought to Iowa. So, you know, that's not a healthy population or TV revenue base. And, you know, more than half of the television sets in the Big 12 are in the state of Texas. So, you know, that's the classic reason for why when people object and say, well, why can't you share revenue like the Big 10? You know, the Big Ten has one outlier, really. That's Northwestern. The rest of the league, obviously Penn State and Ohio State and maybe Michigan are the sort of bell cows, but the middle is quite healthy. And the middle of the Big 12 is not healthy.
Well, let me ask you this. Would you consider Texas and Ohio State, sort of similar in terms of
national. What are you, a dick?
I didn't say anything about the fans. All right.
Have I ever walked up to an opposing elderly fan and thrown a beer at him?
I didn't say anything about the fans.
We're sensitive about that.
That's fine. I hate Ohio State fans with a blinding fury too. There's one good one, and his name is Jason at 11 Warriors. That's it.
What about Seaman?
But anyway, in terms of national standing, money that they generate for both their program and the conference, eyes on TVs, butts in seats. Would you consider Texas and Ohio State similar in those regards?
Comparable, but Texas is number one in revenue.
It's
a useful comp. I mean, if Notre Dame wasn't underachieving right now, that would also be, I think, a useful.
Sure.
Because Texas not only has a passionate local base, which is 25 million people in the state, which is the second most populous state, but they have a sort of secondary strong national interest. I mean, if Texas is playing UCLA and you guys are flipping through channels, you're more inclined to stop on that game than Florida State Clemson, even if the Florida State Clemson game is a better football game. So
let me rephrase it. Would you consider Ohio State to be the Texas of the Big Ten?
Yeah, I mean, I think they would be comparable, but I guess what I'm saying is the difference between first and second, or first and I'd say more crucially fourth in our conference, the difference is vast.
Okay.
Whereas in the Big Ten, I don't feel that exists at all. I think you're middle, you're Iowa. I mean, even your so-called dregs, like Minnesota, that's a real school. That's a real state school. It has real support. It has a real fan base. It's got a real coach that speaks in cliches. I love Tim Brewster press conferences. But,
yes.
I mean, that's kind of the difference. I mean, when you compare that to a Kansas State, which is the number two team in the state of Kansas, which has 2 million people, I mean, it's a sickly conference from that perspective. And that's why I thought, for me, I thought the Pac-16 was the greater play down the road. And I think we just, frankly, I think we punted the ball. I mean, This will all come back in 4 or 5 years.
And that's kind of the point I wanted to get to, is that if Texas really wanted a healthy conference with the teams that they're currently aligned with, wouldn't it be in their best interest to work out some sort of a revenue sharing scheme that's a little bit more even? It seems that this time around, the deal that – there's my cell phone going off. But the it seems that this time around, it almost makes it more inequitable than before. And if their real goal in the end is to keep a long-term pack, or excuse me, long-term Big 12 in the current, incarnation going, that it wouldn't make any sense. Or is it just that there's so much money coming in theoretically that it won't matter?
Well, so I think the key point actually is, by virtue of Texas staying, Iowa State last year made $7 million in revenue, which, is laughable to Big Ten. You average, Northwestern made $21 million, right?
It's only like the fourth most laughable thing about Iowa State, though.
yeah, exactly. So, actually, in the new contract, their revenue doubles. So, had you stayed in the old Big 12, say Nebraska had never left, Colorado had never left, not that we notice Colorado's left, but had that stayed and you take all of Texas's revenue, you capped it at a certain amount, and you distributed it to everybody else, what everybody would get is about $1 million check.
Okay.
So, I guess you could buy a nice plasma TV. But, so that's kind of the point, and that's the basic underpinning of a lot of economics, right? I mean, that's fundamentally why socialism doesn't always progress someone, because once the divisor is big enough, that you have enough pots to fill, enough bowls to fill, the sum that you take from the so-called rich becomes sort of meager. So it's really more of a symbolic act. And that's why I think the Big Ten is so unique, is they actually did a very entrepreneurial thing with the Big Ten Network. I mean, if you read the articles at the time, people didn't think it was going to succeed. And, I think the Big Ten made an aggressive move, and I thought a Pac-16 could have been comparable. The other thing to consider, gentlemen, is, you know, revenue sharing is not the norm. You need to have like-minded institutions. You need to have a strong conference history, a sense of affiliation. I mean, the Big 12 is a marriage of convenience. We don't love her. We just knocked her up, right? Okay. You guys have been in love for 50 years and cooperated, and you have strong relationships and a sense of identity. That doesn't exist at the Big 12. It's a mercenary league. So.
Okay,
that's the fundamental sort of issue that argues against it. And the SEC has revenue sharing at the top, but locally they don't share revenue. So Georgia and Florida get an additional $10 million with their Tier 3 local market stuff. And they could also pursue their own networks if they felt like.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. If the Big Ten adopted the same approach to revenue sharing as the Big 12 did, wouldn't that necessarily destabilize the conference? Like, wouldn't Northwestern start to get a little pissed off about that? And do you think that the Big Ten would still exist if over the last 20 years they had approached television revenue in the same way that the Big 12 did?
They might. And my response might be callous, but it's so what? I don't feel that I owe Baylor a living. I don't know if you owe Northwestern a living. Now, if you choose for reasons of cohesiveness and cooperation to keep the best academic institution, and, you know, frankly, it's a W on your schedule.
Not on ours.
Maybe not your schedule, actually. I just thought about that. That's pretty funny. But, I mean, you know, there are other compelling reasons to do it, but I think the key, I would argue, is the Big Ten grew the pie. And it's much easier to be magnanimous and charitable when the pie is growing. However, when the pie is shrinking or retracting, or as you said, we were caught in some pretty awful staggered contracts with the Big 12. So you couldn't, we couldn't go to networks contractually as a unit. We were actually going to them as individual teams, which is why the original revenue model happened. And by the way, that was not a revenue model Texas jammed down the Big 12's throats in 1995.
Oh, no, I don't think anyone's insinuating that at all.
No, that's exactly what you insinuated.
Oh, bullshit!
Come on, fireworks.
You know what,
I can
actually
hear the parenthetical insinuation.
No, okay, here's the thing. That question, so what, that's actually a really good question. I had never even thought of that.
Well, I mean, I guess my thought is, why do we owe someone else a living?
Well, I think
for the purpose of having a healthy league, right?
So a healthy league in and of itself is a good? That's a societal good?
Wow, this is getting meta. This is like the alt report now. So,
Mr. Capitalism here, but, you know, Texas generates X amount of dollars. And I guess the point that I'm trying to say is, The differences in the Big Ten are not as vast. There's just not a ton of difference between Iowa, Michigan State, Indiana, in terms of what you offer, in terms of living alumni, number of fans, revenue, TV sets. The Big 12 has massive inequities. And wouldn't
revenue sharing maybe ameliorate those massive inequities somewhat? Maybe?
No, for the reasons I said. If you took all of Texas's quote unquote extra revenue, by the way, we generate,
right,
and we sent checks to everybody else, it's worth about $1 million a school. So, you know, it's really a symbolic act.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't think we're going to send our stadium revenues to somebody.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, that's a little Maoist, but Che Guevara, Jacoby. No, but
easy.
Wow. Hey, leave it to
I
the
use
text
dollars
to
like everyone else, Bell.
I like to attack someone's viewpoint that's nuanced and make it as characterized as possible, and then it makes it easier for me to dispel. But no, I think you raise a good point. So what I'm trying to say is there's larger inequities here, and then secondly, what the Big Ten did brilliantly was grew the pie. And that's always usually the answer to getting more revenue. It's not cutting up the current pie to smaller pieces. It's take finding ways as a league that you can grow the pie. Unfortunately, the answer to growing our pie was always Texas, because we have more than half of the league's television sets and half of the league's population.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. you know, when you have that sort of massive inequity, I mean, imagine if the state of Ohio had 50 million people. That would be the interrelationship. I mean, you know, you've got states in the Big 12 with 2 million people. I mean, Colorado was the, you know, populational juggernaut, because they have, what, you know, 6 million people, and Texas has 25. So it's just not a conference that lends itself to that sort of cooperation in ways that I think the SEC and the Big Ten do. So maybe that's just the biased, selfish Texas viewpoint.
Yeah. So where does the Longhorn Network fit into this?
So the Longhorn Network is something that we have been building. We've built capacity in all of our stadiums. We've put in the necessary video infrastructure. We've been doing this for a while, and it was all with the intent of creating a dedicated Longhorn Network. So in a way, it's comparable to what the Big Ten did with their network. The difference is, of course, you're just doing it with one school. So they think the startup costs are going to be about $10 to $15 million, but once it gets running, you know, Texas thinks it should be worth anywhere between $5 and $15 million extra a year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so that was a precluding factor from us joining the Pac-16.
Right.
The Pac-10 wanted, they don't currently have a league network, but they wanted to do a league network, and that would prevent, you know, us from doing that. So I think that was a sticking point, but I think they would have actually folded on that, actually, had we gone to the 11th hour. But
you really think so?
I do. Huh. I really do. Because I think the invigoration of the Pac-16 Super Conference, I think you would have had a rising tide that would have lifted all of the boats in the conference. I think you would have seen some of the sleeping giants like Arizona State, UCLA. I think some of those schools would be reinvigorated and realize that they're in an arms race, and there's a passion being brought into the conference now when you play OU or Texas that
sounds like
before.
A bubble.
What do you mean?
Well, like if it becomes this arms race that you're talking about, and all of a sudden these teams are, and these athletic programs are dumping, you know, tens of millions of dollars into, and maybe dump isn't the right word, but investing certainly $10-15 million. Just to create their own network that they're going to try to sell nationwide.
Yeah.
I don't think that, you know, your Arizona or Arizona State or even Oregon or Oregon State, I don't think that they get that money back.
I don't want to suggest that they could have started their own network individually, but what they do is affiliated networks. In other words, if they want to do a Pacific Northwest network, you could get Washington State, Oregon, Washington. You know, if you wanted to do a California network, you know, you can make arrangements that would roughly approximate what Texas is doing as one school. You could do it with four. So there's ways around it, but I agree. I think ideally you'd want a conference cohesive network.
Mm-hmm. So why not a Big 12 network? How is that not on the table?
For the same reasons. Because the notion would be that we would provide 50% of the eyeballs, 50% of the population, 50% of the televisions, but we would get 1/12 of the programming.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just an inequity that Texans can't abide.
Well, wait a second, because it's also not like Texas is the only school in the Big 12 or the Big whatever it is. Like they were always going to have, and I know that Texas Tech and Baylor aren't shit compared to Texas in terms of fan base and all that. But there is Texas A&M.
Yep.
You know, there too. And, you know, Tech and Baylor, while smaller fish, are still in that same pond with you. So it's not like if Texas wants to make its own network, what do the other three schools do?
Well, so we initially had reached out to Texas A&M to partner on a network.
And they said no.
Because
they declined it, which is strange.
Texas A&M fans listen to games on transistor radios. They don't watch it.
Yeah. Well, so that's the other part that informs this discussion that makes it interesting is Texas A&M is an interesting school because a lot of their identity is derived from their rivalry with Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always a healthy way to go about business. And so a lot of Aggie fans thought going to the SEC would be a way to create a separate identity away from, you know, quote unquote Big Brother. And
yeah, that's just a plea for attention, right? Isn't it?
You said it, not me. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a battle within that school's soul of, you know, how they want to define themselves. Are they the anti-Texas, or are they their own institution? And that's a battle that Aggies are all fighting internally. And so it was a hugely unpopular decision when they decided to stay in the Big 12 as it currently is, you know, consists of 10 teams. Well, so, yeah, I mean, there's going to be some fallout from that. You know, apparently A&M did legitimately have an SEC offer.
Yeah, they in Oklahoma.
They in Oklahoma. And then apparently they'd called us, but as what happened in 1995, but we don't return those calls. So,
right.
I mean, we had a chance to end up in the Big Ten, but, I think the Big Ten's end game was Notre Dame, Texas, and I think Nebraska was the third choice.
Right.
And, as our president described it, we have what he called a tech problem, which is, could Texas disentangle itself from sort of the remoras and hangers-on to join a Big Ten? And I don't think the Big Ten would accept some of the lesser academic schools that might get stuck onto Texas.
I think that was always going to be a big problem with that, is that, say what you will, even the Pac-10 schools kind of looked the other way a little bit on that. My guess is Cal and Stanford weren't really looking the other way. I think they probably had some concerns, but they were paid off essentially to ignore the fact that they were bringing in Texas Tech. I don't know if you could get the presidents at Michigan, Northwestern, University of Chicago, Illinois, to agree to bring in someone like Tech, especially if they weren't AAU. And I think that would have been...
The University of Chicago a part of the academic?
They're part of the academic part still, yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating. I never knew that.
Yeah, they're still part of the academic side is the 11 current schools plus Chicago.
Yeah. And the other sticking issue, obviously, was the network. And then, of course, just geography. I mean, if we couldn't bring in some sister schools that are local, you know, the road games would become a chore. And, you know, if you really want to be a long-term, you know, year 2040 kind of thinker, you know, the demographics maybe the Midwest aren't ideal for a conference.
Yeah.
With Texas. But all the more reason probably the Big Ten was interested in Texas. So.
Sure. No, and I think that's a fair point. I think that's why the Pac-16 idea made so much sense, is that essentially they were given Texas, you know, local games, and then saying you'll have to travel a little bit.
Yeah, and our schedule would have upgraded substantially.
Right.
So now that we play a full round robin schedule, I mean, we're playing Iowa State, Kansas State, Oklahoma State. I mean, those are our road games. We lost our two best road destinations, which is Lincoln, which is a great place to see a football game.
Yes.
And then Boulder, which is just a beautiful city.
Right.
And so, I mean, our
hey, what about Norman? Come on.
We've never been to Norman. We play in Dallas. We played a neutral.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
but they've been to Stillwater.
We've been to Stillwater. Stillwater's run deep.
Yes.
It's not an attractive league. I mean, it's
and that's just it. I don't see how you lose what is unquestionably the biggest fish in the North as far as football goes, and the biggest media market in the North, and triple your TV revenue at the same time. The math doesn't make any sense on what BB sold everybody.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't. It does not make sense. But I think we'll find out soon enough. But I think actually that the networks are significantly overpaying to prevent sort of the unraveling of much bigger interests that are at stake. And by virtue of that, I mean, the virtuous sort of thing that came out of all this is the smaller schools are actually going to get much more revenue than they would have gotten had Texas, you know, had they stayed in the old Big 12 and Texas just shared their revenue. Their payouts would have been less than what they're going to currently get under this new arrangement.
Right. It was and that's kind of what's come out of Iowa State. I, I've moved to Des Moines in the last few weeks, and I've been inundated with Iowa State crap since I got here. But that's kind of what's coming out of there now. It's like basically we'll hold our nose and give Texas what they want because it means we're going to have much more money ourselves.
Well, and so the funny thing is I don't know that – so you have these funny sort of posts and you have a lot of commentators. I mean, Desmond Howard, the genius rocket scientist, was saying that Texas is a gangster and put their Tommy gun on a table and extorted the other programs.
Yeah,
I mean, we kept them out of Conference USA with all due respect.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
At best.
Texas actually did save Iowa State, yeah. I mean, it's another
battle. Yeah, I mean, Iowa State would obviously join the Big Ten.
Right. Believe me, that'll be going up about 2 hours after this gets posted.
They would have joined the MAC.
That's my project for the weekend, believe me. It's going to be like a five-post series on Iowa State kissing my ass.
Yeah, I can be your guest columnist and then
there you go.
See how many Iowa Hawkeye fans can threaten my life. That'd be good.
Well, now – in the aftermath of all of this, a lot of people, Clay Travis in particular, were being, I'll go ahead and say, retarded, saying that Texas was ducking a tougher league, ducking the Pac-16 or the SEC or even the Big Ten. But as we know, it wasn't that you guys were afraid of USC or Florida or Alabama. You were afraid of having to play games against teams from the Gadsden Purchase.
That's right. You don't want to tussle with Arizona in Tucson in Gadsden territory.
when they gave Texas the distribution and said it'd be the six Big 12 teams that were coming over plus Arizona and Arizona State, shivered up the spine of every person in the Texas administration.
I think actually our end game is that eventually our conference affiliation will be in northern Mexico, and we'll actually secede, you know, form a republic, and be a little self-perpetuating sphere of athletic influence. But yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, what might have been? I mean, instead of road trips in Ames, we would have had Seattle in October, or you know, L.A. San Francisco, Berkeley. I mean, those are fun games, and I think they would have drawn national interest. And also, as the Pac-10, you would have had multiple time zones, which is actually people have talked about it as a negative. It's a huge advantage. I mean,
yeah. Well, you can play games all day.
Well,
but yeah, you could run triple headers.
You can run triple headers, exactly.
Theoretically, yeah. I think the only thing that I would be worried about is if Texas starts having kickoffs at, you know, 8:30 or 9:30 p.m. when games go three and a half hours. Now, you know, there are going to be fans who don't want to stay up. Now, maybe you work something out with the conferences that say nobody in the central time zone starts a game later than 7 or something like that. Maybe.
Right.
But,
so what we would have done, and this is just common sense, what we would have done is we would have not done 11 a.m. kickoffs for any California team or West Coast team traveling east. Because their internal clock, it says 9 a.m. And if you look at the history, I like to bet on sports. So if you look at the history of Pac-10 teams playing in the far eastern time zone in a morning game, they get the shit beat out of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so conversely, you would have had a similar rule in the evenings. So, yeah, I mean, we would have had daytime kickoffs at 2:30, 6 o'clock, stuff like that. And then similarly in the Pac-10, you could easily do the 8 o'clock kickoff. They already do that kind of stuff, and it would have actually been actually an advantage. People try to say it's a disadvantage. I think that's foolish. I mean, if you just make some basic accommodations, I think it's a huge sell. And then, you know, you're combining the two largest populations in the United States, Texas and California. So,
well, and before we let you go here, Scipio, I got to ask you one last thing because I think the most fascinating part of this to me has been the role of the Texas legislature and what exactly happened. Because we have our own set of bumbling fools up here who are trying to get involved. If you haven't read, you know, Harkin and Grassley, our two senators and our esteemed governor, have all been agitating about expansion because, well, no one's really quite sure why. But I'm reading now that the Texas legislature is now campaigning to get Houston added to the new Big 12. They were openly stating that Baylor should be getting Colorado spot should the Pac-16 happen. I know that they were very influential on how the Big 12 developed in the first place, because Baylor never would have made the cut as it was, except for the fact that they had some very influential people involved. Did they really have any legitimate chance of either scuttling this or basically carrying along the dregs? I mean, you talked earlier about the fact that, you know, there are some very low-end, low-rent programs involved in the current Big 12, you know, Kansas State, Iowa State, Baylor. And yet you guys have to keep dragging these guys along every time you want to go somewhere. So was there a legitimate chance of them pulling this off, or would it be a simple fact of Texas saying, look at all the money, leave us alone?
Yeah, so Colorado actually had to jump the gun and take the early Pac-10 offer before they were sure the Big 12 was going to dissolve, precisely because they thought Baylor would get forced down the Pac-10's throat.
Right.
And they would lose their spot. So that's why, I mean, and that's a program, speaking of, to Adam's point about the arms race and the bubble, that's a program that's dirt poor. And they overspent. They couldn't even buy out Hawkins last year for $3 million.
That's right.
And now they have to pay $9 million in penalties.
Yeah.
So he's not getting fired next year either.
Yeah, exactly. To your point, Hawkeye State, I think, that's not going to happen. That's just legislative red meat to your constituency. Part of the reason we did want to take some of these schools to the Pac-16 was our own self-interest, which is just in terms of scheduling our games.
Sure.
Basically, you take the Big 12 South, which is legitimately a good conference in and of itself, and you just glom it onto the Pac-10, and that's ideal. Then you add Arizona State. Wow, you're set. And then your road trips, you do three of them a year out on the West Coast. They're fun. Your fans like them. You've got big, interesting matchups, and there you go. You're not going to have U of H in the Big 12. You're not going to have any of these shitty schools. I mean, they do that all the time, and Texas can be just as small time as everybody else in that regard. You have these people who are delusional. But the one thing I will say that's nice about the structure of the state inherently, and probably why it is, you know, doing decently economically compared to everybody else, or where I live in California, which is in debt, is that the legislature doesn't spend much time meeting. And
yeah.
Typically they have to do things that really matter. Whereas when you have a legislature that sits around in your state capital year long, they usually get up to a lot of mischief. So a lot of that's just red meat for their constituency. It doesn't mean anything.
Isn't it that like the Texas legislature only meets for like maybe 1 or 2 months a year?
Yeah, I mean,
they're real
something
fast.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's proven to be good. I mean, in the sense that they hammer out budgets, they fund schools, they do stuff with highways, and then they don't have much time for buffoonery. So, in 1995, you're absolutely right. Those schools were forced on us, but that was a different political climate. And also, Texas didn't have the as a football program, we were kind of lost in the woods. So.
Yeah.
We went through a 12-year sort of time out in the desert where we got our shit together. And then so now it's a little bit different animal.
Well, here's to Mac Brown keeping it that way. I love – he's entertaining as hell. I will give him that.
Yeah, Mac Brown's an interesting character. He is a really good guy and a good sort of steward for the program, sort of grandfatherly and – you know, people like him a lot, and, he weathered some tough times. I mean, when we were getting the shit kicked out of us by OU, you know, people weren't so kindly. But, he's really grown on the Texas program, and then we're pretty excited about Will Muschamp as the coach in waiting. So.
Yeah, and remember when he was the coach who can't win the big one?
Yeah. Well, you know, and all that stuff is written as epilogue, right? I mean, that's the state of our current press, is whatever sort of result happened becomes the, you know, the Big Ten is the shitty conference because they can't win because Ohio State can't win a national title game. Well, the truth is, you know, the Big Ten went out and had a great bowl season. And so now, you know, the Big Ten's being spoken about as this resurgent, dominant conference.
when nothing changed.
Nothing changed. Everything's the same.
Not from 2002 till now. And in 2002, OSC won a title. Nothing
Absolutely.
Has changed.
nothing's changed. And, you know, if Michigan gets reinvigorated, you know, I think there's an easy argument that the Big Ten is the second best league. So,
well, I the only thing that's changed is Georgia Tech is now running the option, which helped us out immensely.
I won some money on that game. So, I want to thank the Hawkeyes again and Demosthenes Odom for
what was tip. Did he give you the tip?
No, he didn't. I haven't talked to Debo since I was like 13 years
That'd
old.
A shame. He'll
hear this podcast and reach out to me. I'm
there
convinced
you go.
Of it.
Well, Scipio, we've kept you a lot longer than we even planned on. We appreciate you coming on, and we'll remind our readers and our listeners that they can catch you at Barking Carnival, as well as any number of excellent writers that you guys have there.
Yeah, hey, my pleasure, and still a big fan, and you guys will have to return the favor. I'm going to have you guys try to come in the fall and offer the Big Ten perspective.
Sounds good. We'll be there.
Excellent.
All right. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Thanks. All right.